Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, media, and academic institutions are corrupt, that the majority are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to first analyze who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they are doing so, because it puts us in a position where we can expose and condemn such schemes. It's not hateful. It's the most caring and compassionate thing we can do. And on our concluding hour today, we're going to use evidence and reason to compare what Yahusha said, that is the actual name of the individual misnamed Jesus, with what Paul had to say about him, so that Christians might know that half of their New Testament is rubbish. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, if you'd like to defend Paul in the third hour of the program, feel free to do so. Our number is 877-300-7645. Pope Francis and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu traded words on Monday over the language spoken by, and this article says, Jesus. It's just amazing that with an individual this prominent, that almost no one knows his name. I mean, I can tell you for absolute certain that he did not have a Greek name. And even in Greek, you can't write Jesus. There's no J. In fact, the letter J, the hard sound of the J, wasn't even invented until the 17th century. And the EUS ending is to make the name masculine to comply with Greek grammar rules. He wasn't Greek. He did not have a Greek name. His name could not be Jesus. It wasn't even remotely akin to Jesus. I mean, there's absolutely no excuse for such stupidity. And yet it's ubiquitous. You've got an entire religion that claims to be led by and founded by this individual, and they haven't a clue as to what his name is. Nor does the Pope. Well, his name is actually a mission statement. His name is an identity designation. And I will tell you for absolute certain that if you do not know his name, you do not know him. If you claim to be a Christian, which is another Greek title, without basis, by the way, and you do not know his name, you are clueless. You are engaged in a religion based on a complete and utter fraud. You do not know him. His name is Yahusha. It is a combination of a Hebrew name, God's name, God's one and only name, Yahweh, and the Hebrew verb Yasha, which means to save. His name is a mission statement. He is Yahweh saving us, which means that Jesus ain't the Savior. Yahweh is the Savior. It means that he indeed came in his father's name. His father is Yahweh. And if you are in a religion and you're focused on this caricature named Jesus, you're missing the entire point, which is to come to know Yahweh, another name as a Christian you do not know. Anyway, the article says that were spoken by Jesus 2 millennia ago. Quote, Jesus was here. Now, I don't know what Netanyahu said. I hope to hell he didn't say Jesus. I hope to hell that he had at least the audacity, the capability, the intellect to say Yahusha. I doubt he did. His own name bears Yahweh's name. It is Netanyahu, after all. Netan is the Hebrew word of meaning to give. And Yahu is short for Yahweh. So it means Yahweh gives or Yahweh's gift, depending on whether you wish to have Netan be a noun or a verb. You ought to know. But anyway, he says that I'm going to use the correct name because I know it. Yahusha was here in this land, speaking of Yisrael. He spoke Hebrew, Netanyahu told Francis, at a public meeting in Jerusalem, in which the Israeli leader cited a strong connection between Judaism and Christianity. No. Sorry, Mr. Netanyahu. There is no connection between Judaism and Christianity. Christianity was born out of rampant hatred of Judaism. The predominant political and religious climate in which Christianity was conceived as a religion and popularized as a religion, which would be during the time of Constantine and then Theodosius, where it was imposed on everyone. It was anti-Semitic in the extreme. The only connection between Judaism and Christianity is Christianity's hatred of Judaism. The Roman Empire, which gave birth to Christianity, had outlawed the Torah, had outlawed circumcision, had outlawed Judaism, had twice destroyed Jerusalem, had murdered millions of Yehudim and Israelites, and those it didn't murder, it hauled away into slavery. There isn't a connection between Judaism and Christianity. This notion that they say they share the same Old Testament is an argument born in ignorance. There is no Old Testament. There is the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's not an Old Testament. There is, by the way, no New Testament either. It's a complete religious myth. The covenant has not yet been renewed. And as for the testimony of Yahweh and the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it ain't old. It's as current as the day that it was inspired. Now, beyond all of that, the fact is that Christians discount almost everything written in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. The Torah, prophets, and Psalms utterly destroy the myth of Christianity. So, while they have it in their alleged Bible, don't pay any attention to it because they claim, based on Paul's letters, that the Torah has been annulled, that it has been replaced by their gospel of grace. This connection between the two actually does not exist. Now, before we go to the Pope's response, which was only half-witted, we have Alex calling in from Tennessee. Welcome to Shattering Myths, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to comment, watch the conversation between the Pope and Netanyahu, and just wanted to tell you that Netanyahu referred to Yahusha as Yeshua.
Okay. Oh, well, thank you for letting me know that. The Yeshua is closer, obviously, than Jesus. It isn't accurate. The rabbis and Jewish religious leaders, in fact, even predating the rabbis, Jewish religious leaders during the Babylonian captivity were called Yahus. It was, you know, like the website Yahoo. Mm-hmm. It was designed to smear them and their God. Their God was Yahweh. They were Yahudim, and which means related to Yah. So in Babylon, where the language was Aramaic, which plays into this, by the way, Aramaic and Hebrew are so similar. I'm not sure it's even as different as a Southerner speaking English and someone with a British accent born in London speaking English. You know, the two are going to have to listen very carefully to one another, but they're speaking the same language. I recently had the opportunity to translate the seventh chapter of Daniel. And the seventh chapter of Daniel is one of the very few places in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms where the oldest manuscript that we have, now the seventh chapter is written in Aramaic. The eighth chapter is back in Hebrew again. But as I translated from Aramaic into English, what I found is that most all of the words are so similar that anyone who knew one language would be very comfortable speaking and understanding the other. So very similar languages. The rabbinic, by the way, term Yeshua or Yeshua is based on what's called the Shaba system. And it's actually based upon the Hebrew verb shoah, which means to corrupt. And after being called Yahus, the religious leaders in Babylonian captivity decided that they would hide and disguise the pronunciation of Yahweh's name. And so they created a system where they artificially changed the sounds of three letters. The three letters that appear in Yahweh's name, the Yod, the He, and the Waw. And so it is through their manipulation of the language as it relates to Yahweh's name that they came up with Yeh as opposed to Yah. And it is it's a crying shame they did so, because they then perpetuated the myth that no one knows how to pronounce the name, which is untrue. Stay with us through the break, and we will return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Speaking of Shattering Myths, it is apparent that Netanyahu knows how to pronounce Yahusha's name, because the name that he is mispronouncing as Yeh is actually in his name. Netanyahu. It's not Netanyahu. The reality is that Yahusha's name is written 222 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And it's written with the same three letters that begin Yahweh's name. The Yod, the He, and the Waw. Now, Yahweh tells us how to pronounce his name because when he introduces his name, he says that it is based upon the Hebrew verb haya, which means to exist. There's no one that disputes the pronunciation of haya. Also, in the most important title in Yahweh's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, the title Torah, you have the proper pronunciation of the waw as the O in Torah. And the ah ending of Torah is from the hey. So there's no question as to how do you pronounce Yahweh's name. It's clear from the pronunciation of every important Hebrew word. Nor is there any question as to how Yahweh inspired his prophets, particularly Yahusha himself and Moshe, to write Yahusha. So there's really no question here. Now, what's interesting, though, is that as we listen to this discussion, we have the Pope really being making an objection that he ought not make. When Netanyahu said that Yahusha spoke Hebrew. The Pope interjected saying Aramaic. And that is really one of the extraordinarily misleading historical artifact. Very few of the people Yahusha spoke to would have been schooled in Aramaic. While almost everyone would have understood Aramaic, the people we find Yahusha speaking to, the most common folks, were not schooled in Aramaic. Their native language was Hebrew. Moreover, all of the scrolls and all of the passages Yahusha cited, hundreds of them, were written in Hebrew. He read from them and cited them in Hebrew. There are several places where the language that he spoke was specifically delineated. Only one place was it delineated as Aramaic, which was the citation of, my God, why have you forsaken me? Which is interesting in that he was citing a Hebrew passage from Psalm 22. Which means I think that the account is miscited to the language. Now, there are many places where it says that he spoke Hebrew, but every time that he is reading from the scroll, every time that he is citing a passage from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, which he did hundreds of times, he's speaking in Hebrew. Moreover, the vast preponderance of his audience was native Hebrew speakers. And so what the Pope should have said is, yes, he spoke predominantly Hebrew. He also spoke some Aramaic. And then if he was really astute, the Pope would have said, but you know, the difference between Hebrew and Aramaic is fairly slight, and anyone that understood one language would understand the other. Your point is valid. That is what an informed individual should have said. But this Pope, I'm telling you, he does not have all of his oars in the water. He is popular among Catholics because he's stupid. And he just seems to be this happy-go-lucky idiot that smiles a lot. But he's dumb as a stone. Netanyahu did not have the world's greatest answer. And it's a shame. I am sometimes impressed with Netanyahu, sometimes not. He said he spoke Aramaic, but he also knew Hebrew. Was Netanyahu's response. That's a silly response. We think he may have spoken Aramaic on occasion. We don't even know that for sure. But we know for absolute sure he spoke Hebrew. And why Netanyahu said, in your own Latin Vulgate, there are passages where it says he spoke Hebrew. You know, when he was quoting from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, he was reciting them in Hebrew. Even the one line that's allegedly spoken in Aramaic, it was a citation of a Hebrew passage. Why didn't Netanyahu say that? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The expert that the writer of this particular article turned to, I think, is wrong. But let's recognize that before we even go to his quote, that the issue that Netanyahu was trying to address was that the Palestinians, this mythical people, based upon a long extinct tribe, being extinct, haven't existed for over 2,600 years, masquerading as if the state was actually named Palestine, something that a lie that the Pope has bought into, are presenting the Christian Jesus as a Palestinian. The Quran itself presents him as a Muslim. Now, what's interesting, of course, about the Quran is that just like the Palestinians, they have no idea what his name is. The Quranic name is Esau. Now, the Quran doesn't have any excuse. Written Arabic uses the Hebrew alphabet. Same exact sounds, same letters. And so, in Arabic, there is no excuse for not getting Yahusha's name right. But Muhammad, dumb as a stone, when he was trying to incorporate Talmudic recitals into his Quran and to pick up a little of hearsay about Christianity, didn't know his name. And so he called him Esau. That's the Quran, say Aramaic or Arabic, excuse me, Arabic transliteration of Esau. The one person that Yahweh called out by name to say, I hate. And that's the Quranic name. So the Quran, as always, is stupid. It's erroneous. But they then claim that this Esau is the personage that Christians call Jesus and that he was actually a Muslim. Now, mind you, his last visit ended in 33 CE, which was almost 600 years before Islam was even invented. So, not very accurate in that regard. But they present him as if he was also a mythical person, a Palestinian, which would make him an Arab. Of course, it's ubiquitous. The lie is pervasive. And, you know, if you lie enough and you communicate your lies visually in pictures sufficiently among an ignorant population, they will believe them. And so most Muslims think that he was a Muslim and that he was a Arab and was one of them. Now he's even given a heritage back to a mythical people. And so in that environment where the Pope was lambasted with all sorts of just revolting images as a backdrop to his masses and his meetings of the pictures of Jesus in Arabic terrorist gear and Arabic terrorist headdresses, where the Pope didn't say diddly squat. When Netanyahu makes an accurate statement that Yahusha spoke Hebrew, he argued with him. He didn't say, yes, he spoke Hebrew, and mostly Hebrew, but he also may have spoken some Aramaic. He didn't say that. He argued with him. He just said Aramaic, period. Which is to say, no, he didn't speak Hebrew, he spoke Aramaic. That would make the Pope wrong. Yeah, I know that Catholics, you're told that your dunderhead is infallible, but he was wrong. There is the possibility that he may have spoken some Aramaic, but he mostly spoke Hebrew, which means he never should have answered that statement that way. The only sensible way to answer the statement is, you're right. He spoke mostly Hebrew. He cited the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms hundreds of times. The vast preponderance of the people that he spoke to, the common folks, spoke Hebrew. That was their native language. It was only the elitist that would have been educated in Aramaic. And the fact is that the languages are so similar that a listener to one would have understood the other. That is what the Pope should have said. But he didn't. He just wanted to disagree with Netanyahu. He wanted to trump him on a point. It's disgusting. It's for better part of now 1700 years, the Roman Catholic Church and its partner, the Eastern Orthodox Church, has done everything they can to remove all things Hebrew from the caricature that they have at the head of their religion. Even changing his name to a Greek name. It's reprehensible. An Israeli linguistics professor, Zuckerman, told Reuters that both Netanyahu, son of a distinguished Jewish historian, and the Pope, the spiritual leader of 1.2 billion morons known as Catholics, had a point. No. Netanyahu had a point. The Pope didn't. The Pope's response was to correct him, to say, no, he didn't speak Hebrew, he spoke Aramaic. The Pope was wrong. Netanyahu was right. They both didn't have a point. He would go on to say that, we'll use the correct name, Yahusha, was a native Aramaic speaker. That's not true. He was a native Hebrew speaker. The language of heaven is Hebrew. He authored his Torah in Hebrew. He authored his Psalms in Hebrew. He inspired his prophets in Hebrew. Even when we are given a glimpse into to heaven, each time, even in Revelation, the language spoken there is Hebrew. There is only three or four chapters of one book in the entire Torah, Prophets, and Psalms written in Aramaic. All the rest is written in Hebrew. Yahusha was a native Hebrew speaker. He said that the largely defunct Semitic language is closely related to Hebrew. Well, that part's true. You know, you got one of two things true. But he would have also known Hebrew because there were extant religious writings in Hebrew. Yeah, extant. There were no religious writings. But there were extant Torah scrolls and Psalm scrolls and prophet scrolls that he read from that were in Hebrew. Gosh, it's just amazing that the Israeli intelligentsia is no brighter than the moron masquerading as Pope. Zuckerman said that during Yosha's time, Hebrew was spoken by the lower classes, the kind of people that Yosha ministered to. And one of the things we learned as we have begun to publish all of the documents in the Qumran scroll collection, you know, about half the documents are not from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. They're part of the daily communication or letters between the Qumran community and others, is that almost all of the personal and private communication between those in the Qumran community and their family and friends and all the business transactions, all of that stuff was written in Hebrew. The myth that the dominant language of Yisrael during the first century CE being Aramaic is simply not true. It was promoted expressly to distance Yahusha from all things Hebrew. Before we turn to some citations that I want to share with you about the overt animosity of early Christians towards all things Hebrew, I do want to point out another mistake by Pope Francis. He was speaking out against sexual abuse by the Catholic clergy yesterday, and he said that he plans to meet with the victims in early June. Now, is it a mistake to speak out against pedophile priests? Of course not. Is it inappropriate for the Pope to meet with the victims of a priestly pedophilia? No, but of course, if he were to meet with all of them, it would spend the next 10 years doing so. Stressing that such abuse constitutes a horrific crime, by the way, and the canon law now says the greater crime, though, is disclosing the priestly pedophilia, thereby embarrassing the church. He told reporters aboard the papal plane that three bishops are under investigation. It is not clear whether the bishops are under investigation for alleged abuse or for their purported involvement in the church's ongoing cover-up. But this is what the Pope said that is, again, wrong. He says, a priest who abuses a child betrays the body of the Lord. The Lord is Satan, folks. Satan doesn't have a body. Satan is a spiritual being. He is a fallen Moloch, a messenger or envoy of Yahweh. He does not have a body. But even if you were to give the Pope a break that he does not deserve, and you were to say that, all right, he's speaking of the Christian Jesus. The Christian Jesus doesn't have a body either. And you might say, well, I mean, he walked on the earth, he had a body, he didn't have a body, right? No, he didn't have a body. He didn't have a body anymore. You can't abuse his body. You can't betray his body. His doesn't have a body anymore. At the evening of Passover in 33 CE, 4000 Yah, his physical body was destroyed. It was incinerated. That's why there was no bodily resurrection. It was destroyed that night in accordance with the Torah. Now, this Pope claims that the Torah is part of his Bible. He should have known that. And the physical corporeal body, other than representing the Passover lamb, was absolutely meaningless. The body is not something we should even be thinking about. You're wrong again. Welcome back to Shattering This. I just want to underscore the point that even if you were to give the Pope a pass and identify the Lord not with Satan, but with the Christian Jesus, there is no connection between a priest abusing a child and them betraying the body of the Lord. None. I mean, it is utterly absurd. But most of the things that come out of this man's mouth are utterly absurd. He is an absolute nincompoop. It's astonishing that he is so popular among the 1.2 billion Roman Catholics. But maybe in a religion of make-believe, a person who is half-witted sounds brilliant. Now, what I want to share with you, and I promise to do this now for some time, is the view that was promoted of Jews during the period of time that the Roman Catholic Church and Eastern Orthodox Church were being conceived. This first quote is from Dio Cassius. Dio Cassius wrote one of the most comprehensive histories of Rome. I think it's some 80 volumes. He spent 22 years doing it. He is not just a lone voice. He was born the son of a Roman senator. He himself was appointed to the office of consul, which is the highest appointed office in Rome. He ruled during the time of Theodosius, and during the time of the Nicene Council, which is where the mythos of Christianity as a unique religion and the wholesale separation of the Christian Jesus from Yahweh was commenced. And so he is an aristocratic Roman with theological heritage as well. He was also a Greek, wrote in Greek, and was related to one of the most famous Greek philosophers. His view was mainstream Roman, as well as mainstream Greek. He wrote, now this is talking about an incident that took place in 115 CE, 100 years before Dio Cassius lived. And this is between the two Roman attacks on Jews. So this is written, in essence, to vilify the surviving Jews to justify their annihilation a second time. Meanwhile, the Jews in the region of Cyrene had put one Andreas at their head and were destroying both Romans and the Greeks. They would cook their flesh. They would make belts for themselves of their entrails. They would anoint themselves with their blood. They would wear their skins for clothing. Many they sawed in two, from head downwards. Others they would give to wild beasts and force still others to fight as gladiators. In all, consequently, 220,000 perished. In Egypt, they also performed many similar deeds. And in Cyprus, under the leadership of Artumio, there, likewise, 240,000 perished at the hands of the Jews. For this reason, no Jew may set foot in that land. And even if one of them is driven upon the island by force of the wind, he is put to death. Various persons took part in subduing these Jews, one being Lucius, who was sent by Trajan. This is in Dio's Rome, Volume 5, Book 68, Paragraph 32. About 1% of what he said is true. About 1%. 99% is erroneous. It's kind of the same margin I guess you could apply to Christianity in general. The Jews were religious Jews and Torah observant Jews, both, are prohibited from touching dead flesh. So they would absolutely not cook dead flesh. They are prohibited, both in Judaism and in the Torah, from eating human flesh. Therefore, they would not cook human flesh. Their belts were specifically designed in the Torah. They were not made of entrails. They were prohibited from drinking and touching blood. They most certainly did not anoint themselves in blood. They did not wear skins for clothing. Jews did not saw any Roman in two from the head downwards. Jews did not orchestrate gladiatorial fights. All of this is designed to